What's Happening in Helena is a weekly digest of the 2005 Montana Legislature, hosted by YPR News Director Jackie Yamanaka and Jim Gransberry of the Billings Gazette. Tonight, Senate President John Tester, Representative Monica Lindeen, Jack Kopp, Executive Director of the Montana Quality Education Coalition, and, as always, listener questions and comments. And now, what's happening in Helena?
Good evening and welcome to What's Happening in Helena. After a week's respite for the Easter break, we are back at it here. Jackie, how are you this evening?
Hi, Jim. It's been another busy day at the Montana Legislature.
It's getting crunch time for a number of reasons.
It is.
Money bills have to go across, revenue bills. We also
yes.
have to get something done with
the budget.
And
then there's school funding.
And that's what we're going to talk about this evening. Our first guest this evening is the Senate President, John Tester, a Democrat from Big Sandy. And he's going to give us a little recap of what happened this past week on the education front. Good evening, Senator.
Good evening, Jim and Jackie. It's good to be here.
Thank you for interrupting your Senate Finance Committee meeting. I guess, you know, before we begin, I should just mention very quickly, House Bill 63 was up on the floor for debate last week before the Easter break, and Senator Don Ryan basically amended in three bills.
Mm-hmm.
Were you aware that he was going to do that? Did he have your blessing to do that before he went ahead and did that last Thursday?
Yes.
And why is that?
Well, because I think it gives us an opportunity to put the funding mechanism that's going to fund us in this gap the first year, even though it is a two-year funding bill. We've made a commitment to get a funding mechanism out for the second year, a different one than what we have now, one that's more relevant to the kids' education. But what it does by amending 177 into that, and it did some other stuff too, it really gives us the opportunity to get the second piece of the puzzle behind us, and that is that $80 million that the governor and that we have committed to put to K-12 education, make it a reality so that as districts set forth their budget, which they're doing as we speak, if not done already, so they can plan on those monies when they set their budget up. So that's what it was about. We're getting in the latter moments of this session, and the two bills that were the funding bills were tied up in the House on tie votes, and we just felt that 177 that passed the Senate in a good form, I mean by 40-10 or somewhere around that neck of the woods, it would be appropriate to get that in so we can get the ball rolling so schools know where they stand as far as funding for the upcoming year.
So what we have the definition for quality education.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mechanism to provide $80 million for the first year.
Yeah, actually, that $80 million it's in a 2-year. It's in a bill that funds for the biennium, Jim.
Okay, and then we're looking at something else to add more money for the second year.
No, that
the formula.
That the money in House Bill 63 is for both years, but we have made a commitment to get a new funding mechanism because it, quite mm-hmm. frankly, the old one doesn't work very well, and the more we look at it, the more I understand totally well why it doesn't work very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets us to a point where the first year funding it's there and people can count on it, and we were just trying to move it forward so it isn't the last thing we do on the last day of the session, and mm-hmm. so the school districts have the ability to plan on those monies and give them the flexibility to meet the needs of their kids so they don't have to lay off teachers or whatever, and be able to move their business along at the local level.
The biggest concern, though, with House Bill 63 mm-hmm. has been the potential, and I stress that, potential impact on local property taxpayers, homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reconcile that?
Well, that's a difficult thing to reconcile because it's a product of the funding formula that we're going to get rid of. And what transpired when we put money into education at the state level is it requires some increases because of the percentage formula in the formula itself, the funding formula for schools. It requires some increases in property tax. Now, potential is exactly the right word to use here because the local school districts, and I served on one for 9 years, have the ability to make the decisions, and they know the funding needs of their kids. And if $80 million is not enough, they can use that property tax money that they're going to derive because of the $80 million that's funneled out to the state. And if they don't need it, they can reappropriate it back at the end of their budget cycle, if that's the case. Now, I'll tell you, quite honestly, to the listeners and everybody else, K-12 education has been starved the last few years. And let me put this in perspective. The money that we put in House Bill 63 is as much as the cumulative total that's been put in the funding formula for state dollars since that funding formula was adopted in the early 90s. And so what's happened is at the local level, they've had to increase property taxes. They've had no choice to make up for that difference in shortfall from state funding. We're trying to turn that around and stop that huge property tax shift. We didn't get it zeroed out at the local level. I was wishing we could, but local school boards still have that opportunity if they're flush enough to be able to send some of that money back for property tax reduction at the end of their budget cycle.
There's also quite a bit of talk, John, about, and I'm not going to call it a special session,
mm-hmm.
But saving some days during this regular session and coming back when a more permanent school funding formula is fleshed out. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we're going to do our absolute best to try to get a funding formula out before the end of the session, and a funding formula that works for everybody, the local school districts mainly, but the taxpayers and the kids ultimately. And we have been working on this since early on in the session. We've had that joint select committee working on it, and they've done literally hours and hours and hours upon hours of work on this new funding mechanism. I'm still in hopes we can get it out by the end of the session. I dearly hope it does. But if it works out where potentially we can, and I don't really want to think about that, then we may have to come back. But that's not the hope here. The hope here is to get one out by the end of the session, keeping in mind that we've got to do some analysis on the new funding formula to make sure it works, because we don't want to put a funding formula in place that is either unconstitutional or, in effect, not workable, and we end up in a special session because we have to be, because the funding formula that we put out here isn't right. The other component in this latter days of the session is we've got to get the kind of input we need from the public to make sure it works right, and that's a critical part of the legislative process, because if you think back to previous sessions, the bills that are done at the very end that are done in haste tend to be a wreck, and we don't want to fall into that boat either.
They certainly can bite you in the rear.
Yeah.
What
well,
that does is gives reporters something to do after you go home.
That's job security.
Well, sometimes we don't know, though, until a few weeks pass. But let me follow up on that, John, and ask you this then. In order to have that, what you would call, what, adequate public input,
yes,
you're going to... Tomorrow's April 1. It's day 69. When then would the committee have to come forward with a funding formula to allow the hearings and public input and so forth? I mean, have you sort of set the...
Well, I was
sort of an outside date?
Yeah, I was hoping that it would have been here by Easter. Easter's passed, as we all know. I am in hopes that it can be brought out in at least in conceptual form by next week, and I hope they can do that. And then, of course, we go to work in structuring a bill that will work, and doing the kind of analysis so that we don't do harm in this process. I mean, ultimately, we want to take this education challenge that we have and solve it. We don't want to create more problems by doing work that isn't right. So getting back to your question, Jackie, though, it's got to come out very, very soon. We've got 21 days left, and it's got to come out very soon, and the analysis is going to be no small feat. It's going to be difficult to get done by the end of the session, but like I said, I think we have to continue to work in that vein to try to get it out, do every possible thing we can do to get it out by the end of the session.
I've been trying to keep track of this, but there was a bill which would have created a health insurance pool. And that has gone down because the governor is opposed to it. Is that correct?
Well, it was more than just a pool. We had a pool bill last session that failed in the Senate by just a vote or two. This is a pooling bill with about $48 million in it that kicked in the second year of the biennium. That would be a $96 million hit. Here, and I think the pool was a pretty good idea, except for the fact that with this new funding mechanism, I think we're going to get to a point where it will give local school districts the kind of flexibility they need to be able to do what that SHIPS program wanted to do anyway. And I'll tell you how. Because I think a large part of that funding formula is going to be a classroom entitlement that is based on a number of things, including teacher salaries and benefits. And those benefits do include health insurance.
So what we're looking at tentatively is that we're going to set a formula based on what it costs to have a particular classroom.
That is going to be a major part of it. There's also going to be elements in it, I'm sure, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know, but they've been talking about it in these joint committees. I've been talking to Senator Ryan about it as much time as I can. But it also could include things like an entitlement for the physical plant, the maintenance of the plant, things like transportation, and it also may well include some inputs on A and B. But what we're really looking for in the funding mechanism is something that will be long term and fix this problem that we've came into the session with on a long term situation. And that's by House Bill 63 is a short term fix. This funding mechanism is going to be the long term fix.
Senator Story mentioned today in the funding committee that perhaps as a contingency, because the Senate does have the state's main funding bill, House Bill 2, that maybe a bill needs to be drafted quickly and inserted into House Bill 2 in case there does need to be work during the interim on school funding. And then he said, you know, we need to talk to leadership about that.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
Well, as I said before, I think we need to make every effort we can to get it out by the end of the session. If that doesn't come to pass, then we have to start thinking about contingent ways of doing that. House Bill 2 is, I mean, it's not going to be on the Senate floor till next Thursday and Friday. And then there's potentially a conference. Well, there will be a conference committee after that. So
you think there's time?
Yeah, there is time for something like that. I hope we don't have to utilize it, though.
We've been visiting with the president of the Montana Senate, Senator John Tester, a Democrat from Big Sandy. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank both of you.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back. You're listening to What's Happening in Helena, a weekly review of the Montana Legislative Session. I'm Jim Gransbury of the Billings Gazette, along with Jackie Yamanaka of Yellowstone Public Radio. Jackie, I believe our next guest is with you in our...
Actually, she's not.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm on the phone, though.
You're on the phone. Good evening.
I thought I heard the phone.
Yes.
Welcome. Representative Monica Lindeen should identify you as... Democratic legislator from Huntley and also chair of the House Select Committee on Education. We've been visiting with the Senate President, John Tester, about the action last week in the Senate, basically to deal with short-term school funding. Just have to ask you your reaction, because it was Senate Bill 177 that was stuck in your committee, and basically the Senate just plucked it and plug the language into to an otherwise very boring House bill with a very broad title, School Funding Revision.
Yes.
You know, your reaction to that, I mean, is this a power play by the Senate?
Well, first of all, I guess I'd like to say that it's nothing unusual that hasn't happened in past legislatures where we amend bills into other bills. It happens all the time. And yes, I mean, Senate Bill 177 and House Bill 125 by Representative Razor were both in my committee, were both funding vehicles for the schools, and we couldn't get a bill out of the committee. We just kept getting tie votes, and so, you know, I'm not surprised that the Senate decided that, you know, we've got to get this issue moving forward, and so in order to do it, they just went ahead and amended that bill, 177, as well as some other things into House Bill 63, and away we go. We're going to get this done and get some, make sure that schools understand and realize that this is how much money they have to deal with, and they can make some decisions as far as their budgets and what kind of levies they need to look at putting out to the voters or not.
So I guess no hard feelings on your part?
No hard feelings whatsoever. I mean, you know, we've got an incredible challenge here in this session dealing with the education issue in regards to the Supreme Court decision, and frankly, you know, to be holding things up in committee is counterproductive.
Did Senator Ryan talk to you before he did this?
Actually, you know, there was some discussion just briefly about the possibility that they, you know, were looking at an option, but, you know, they didn't tell me definitively that this is what they were going to do. But, you know, there was some discussion about a possibility.
What would be your analysis right now on House Bill 63? It's my understanding it's not going to go back to committee. I mean, it's just going to go back to the House.
Well,
and if fellow legislators come to you and say, Monica, what do I do? How do I vote? What are you going to say?
Well, I mean, I think what we want to do is take a look at all the amendments that were put on, because there were some more that were put on yesterday. And we may want to take a look at those and make sure that, you know, the fiscal impact is certainly what we want to occur or not to occur, and so we want to take a look at it before we make a final decision on whether or not we want to concur or not with all of the amendments that the Senate made. So until we've had a chance to really look those over the next day or so, I'm not prepared to, you know, tell everybody that, yes, go ahead and vote for it or not. I think there's some good things that it does. I mean, it really corrects the mistake the last legislature made when it required school districts to, you know, fund the cost of the federally funded school employees out of their federal and general funds. You know, obviously it's increasing present law for funding for high school A&B and for elementary. It adopts the three-year A&B averaging. It's providing evidently school districts some flexibility on how they budget. All sorts of different things. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things that this bill is doing. But I think it's also fair to say that the House needs at least a day or two to really look at everything carefully and ensure that we're ready to go ahead and accept all the amendments.
Monica, you're up. I'm sorry, Jim.
Let's go ahead.
You're a politically savvy woman. And I'm wondering how you see the potential, and I'll stress that, potential for a big property tax increase, you know, about $51 a year, and the impact on homeowners, and especially that Democrats have said they wanted to give property tax relief. And here this bill has the potential to increase property taxes. And that certainly gives a lot of ammunition to Republicans. You're tied in the House 50-50. I mean, your analysis.
Well, I guess I'd respond to that in two ways. First, I mean, I think we have to all kind of step back and remember that the failure by Republican leadership over the last decade to fund schools has certainly resulted in increased property taxes. And secondly, remember that we've got a challenge here in dealing with the Supreme Court decision. Obviously, we've already defined quality education, and that's done. We've got a new formula that has to be put together based on that definition, those educationally relevant factors. In the short term, we've got to put some money into the existing formula. There's always that potential that there could be property tax increases, but we also need to remember that the school boards out there are pretty conservative, and the fact is that they're not going to ask for property tax increases if they don't have to. And if Republicans want to say that this is going to cause a big property tax increase, then what they are really saying is that we need to put more money into schools in order to avoid property tax increases. So, I mean, there's always two edges to the sword there. The fact is that we are dealing with an incredible challenge. We're going to move forward, and we're going to come out of here with, I think, a lot of good things, having defined schools, having put money into the schools for the short term, and at the same time working on a formula that is going to be much fairer in the future for property taxpayers and for the students of the state.
Will the formula be finished before you go home?
Well, you know, I'm not on that joint select committee that's been working on the formula. I know that they've been working really, really hard, and I'm hopeful that they're going to have something for us to look at before the end of the session.
What is the status of your House Select Committee on Education?
Well, the House Select Committee on Education is pretty much done with their work. It's the joint select committee that has the two senators and two House members now that is kind of the focus, because we've finished up our portion of dealing with the education funding issue, and now they've got to work on the formula, and so that's where all the focus is right now, is on that committee.
I just wonder, you know, again, any regrets, I guess, you know, as chair of the committee, the House Select Education Committee, that you didn't have a chance to, you know, more time perhaps to maybe work on House Bill 125 by Representative Razor, which is the alternative to the short-term bill that's working its way through now?
Well, I mean, I think there's always regrets when you realize that you've got a committee who, on the one hand, did an incredible job of coming together and working together, you know, bringing a bill that defines quality education out of the committee on a unanimous vote. But on the other hand, unfortunately, one side has chosen to, I think, play politics by, you know, not allowing at least one of those two funding bills to come out of the committee. So, yeah, you bet there's some regrets there.
But no bill is ever dead until
that
final gavel falls. I mean, but no bill is ever truly dead until you adjourn, sine die.
Oh, absolutely. We know that, don't we?
So, I guess that House Bill 125 by Holly Razor is not true, or is it truly dead in your mind?
Well, I think that there also comes a point where everyone realizes that there's a certain vehicle that is going to be the vehicle for the session. And since we're at the late date that we are, I think House Bill 63 is the vehicle. Obviously, you can always take this to a free conference committee if you wanted to, and you could amend it to look more like 125 if you wanted to. So, I mean, there's always still options open.
What kind of feedback are you getting from the school boards on what they're facing and what they might get in the short term?
Well, I think that since the feedback that we've been getting since the amendments went on to House Bill 63 is much more positive, and I think that there's also now a better understanding that putting the money into the current formula is truly only to deal with the first year of the next biennium. And hoping and making the school boards and the education community understand that we really want to have that new funding formula in place and in effect by the second year. And so I think that they're beginning to understand and realize that we are going to make this happen for them. And so I think everybody's much more hopeful and much more positive about what's happening in the session than they probably were a few weeks ago, because they weren't seeing things actually get accomplished, so to speak, as far as the funding end of things. And I think that was part of the frustration with allowing my committee to sit there and continue to fight it out. I mean, there was no positive action that made the school boards and the school say, okay, we know we're going to be getting this much money. We know how we can deal with our budgets now. And so having the positive action on House Bill 63, I think, has really helped.
And speaking from an individual legislator standpoint, what would your preference be for that joint committee to continue to plow away and try and get a formula before the end of the 90 days, or would you prefer to go home and talk to your constituents and then come back?
Well, I think that we need to, no matter what, have that committee continue to work and get as much work done as possible. And if they get the formula done, great. If not, whatever work they've accomplished is certainly going to benefit us in the interim, in any kind of interim study process to complete that work. And as any time we can have public input, the more public input, the better. So we're just going to have to wait and see how things play out over the next 20 or so days.
So you don't necessarily have a preference as a legislator from...
Well, I mean, my preference is that whatever we do it and do it right. You know what I'm saying? Because what we don't want to do is end up with a situation, what happened in, 1992 or 93 when they did House Bill 667, which is the current funding formula, which, you know, kind of happened in the last minute, and there wasn't a chance for as much public input as we would have probably liked to have seen. And frankly, you know, at the time it seemed fine, but as we know now, there certainly could have been more work done to ensure that it was a better funding formula.
We've been visiting with Representative Monica Lindeen, a Democrat from Huntley, who is the chair of the House Select Education Committee. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you,
Monica.
Jim. Thank you, Jackie. Take care.
We'll be right back.
Education rock, A and a B and a C, E, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z, and 1 and 2, say how do you do, and I'm right on here, I never turn my back on you.
This is What's Happening in Helena, a weekly presentation of the Yellowstone Public Radio. I'm Jim Gransbury of the Billings Gazette, along with Jackie Yamanaka, who has been covering the legislature in person for 3 months now. And our next guest is with her in the Lee State Bureau offices in Helena this evening. We have the Executive Director of the Montana Quality Education Coalition, Mr. Jack Copps. Good evening, and welcome.
Good evening.
And I guess, you know, Jack, the question is how are legislators, you know, we've been talking about school funding and what's happened so far. Your organization is the lead plaintiff in the latest school funding lawsuit. You were successful. Your assessment, how are legislators doing so far?
Well, Jackie, let me say, first of all, I was a high school principal for 15 years, and as we always approach the last quarter of school or the closing days of school, we needed to remind ourselves that we all needed to take a deep breath and think about what we've accomplished and think about what opportunities we have left. And so, you know, this is kind of a tense time, but I would say at this time that we are deeply appreciative for the work that has been done in this legislature. There is no question that there are some legislators who have done everything within their means at this point to address the issue. And it's a big issue. I'm one of those people that believe that this legislature will not have the opportunity to complete all of the work that's necessary, but it will have finished a considerable amount, and we are deeply grateful for that.
You expect then that the legislature will go home without having a final formula for the school funding distribution?
No, let me answer that by saying that the legislature defined the basic system of quality schools, and that was a very important step to complete. And though we aren't completely happy with that definition, I have to applaud the work of the legislature because it was truly a bipartisan effort. Truly a bipartisan effort. And when we ever have that kind of scenario taking place, the results are generally pretty good. We have committees at work right now, and they're doing important things. This joint Ed committee that's working on funding is doing some very important things. It is looking at different ways in which we should provide what we call entitlements to schools instead of just providing money based on a district. Maybe we ought to be looking at things like building entitlements, because some school districts, a great example being Billings, have multiple high schools, and maybe those different high schools should have an entitlement that instead of just one single district entitlement. So there's a lot of important work going on there. The Supreme Court and the district court said that one of the responsibilities of the legislature is now to assess educational needs and to make sure that we understand what the costs are to provide for those educational needs. And that is a very involved process. And I suspect that is going to take more time now than what this legislature has left. And very frankly, I expected that from the start. And so I think this legislature is going to need to have time later on in this year to complete its work, and it's going to need to, in the interim, it's going to need to have some kind of legislative task force that will complete the work necessary for the legislature to consider the recommendations. I also probably need to add at this point that we need to do this right the first time. And if that requires a little more time, then we ought to take that time. At the same time, I also know that, I think it was the Village Gazette that said, you know, a first grader is only a first grader once. And so we need to make sure that as soon as possible, our educational system, our funding system, is in compliance with the expectations of the Constitution. But we do have the ability now to complete the work at hand, and I think we have that ability to do so by the end of this year.
If the formula isn't completed, do you see it as a task for the interim study, or are you looking at a special session because the judge, the courts put the deadline of 1 October 2005 to meet its requirements? So are you anticipating something that will see the schools for the next 2 years and then an interim study done, or are you looking at a special session before we get to October 1st?
I think it will take an interim study of some kind, a legislative study of some kind. And I think the work of that committee can be complete probably in the fall of 2005, leaving the opportunity for a short special session of the legislature that could convene in December, and then act upon the recommendations of that task force. That would be sufficient time to put the new funding system in place for the 2006-2007 school year. And that would satisfy our expectations so long, and this is a very important piece of this, so long as the effort undertaken in the interim in fact, will produce substantial reform as is expected by the court order.
I want to explore an idea here that I've been thinking about over the last couple of days, is that we have a lot of problem in this country right now concerning the division of labor, if you will, or the fact that the constitutions of the United States and the state of Montana envisions three co-equal branches of government. And the district court and the Supreme Court did not put a price tag, a dollar figure, on their decision, leaving that rightfully so to the legislature. However, if what comes out of this legislature is deemed inadequate by the plaintiffs in the suit, are they then going to go back to the court and ask them for some sort of specific, like, you know, we used to have the state pay up to, what, 75-80% of the cost of running the schools, and the local school districts were responsible for the rest. Are we looking at a situation in where we could incite constitutional crisis?
Well, first of all, the courts did properly and say to the legislature, this is your responsibility. And we have determined that the system is unconstitutional, and now it is your responsibility to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Every elected legislator raises his or her right hand and takes an oath to uphold the Constitution. And we have to assume that when these elected officials take that oath, that they in fact intend to uphold the constitutional rights of all citizens in this state, including the youngest citizens. So we want to be, very frankly, as positive and as optimistic as we can be. I spend every single day here at the legislature, and I truly believe that there are a significant number of legislators who are doing their very best to try to resolve this issue. This is, as some people have said, a huge elephant in the room. This matter has been festering for a long period of time, and it is not going to see any end, you know, quickly. The court also said, it gave an October deadline, but the court also said, you know, that it understood that there may be a phase-in necessary.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that this legislature has an interest in working with us, and we clearly have an interest in working with the legislators to make sure that this matter moves forward in a constructive, in a meaningful manner. And I believe that we can satisfactorily resolve the issues that are before us at this point. And then I go back and say, but we also need to take that deep breath and make sure that we all understand that we do have the capacity to work closely with each other to make sure that we do what is right for every single Montanan. That includes the children of the state, but it also includes every single parent and every single Montanan, because that is our obligation at this point, and we have to accomplish that.
In addition to talking with legislators, you're also talking among the other plaintiffs in the successful lawsuit, and what has happened in some of the bills has divided the education community. Sometimes you'll have education groups speaking in favor of a bill and equally education groups speaking against, for and against. And one example is the short-term funding bill, which is now known as House Bill 63. I guess, you know, how do you make that final determination? Is it going to be left up to the courts as to whether or not the 2005 Montana legislature has been successful in meeting that court challenge, when even among the education groups there may not be agreement? To be specific, the head of the teachers union was very disappointed that the health insurance pool for teachers did not pass, and he said that would have been a good faith effort, and that, you know, maybe this is grounds to go back to the court. Now, I realize you're just speaking for your organization, but...
Well, and MEA MFT is a member of our
coalition. Yes.
As is the School Board Association, as are more than 100 school districts and...
Some parents.
That's exactly right. And sometimes we don't even agree with each other. And for the simple reason that, in some cases with districts, there are different things that affect districts differently. If you have increasing enrollments in a district, you are impacted differently by legislation than you are if you have declining enrollments. Three-year averaging, for example, is very important to school districts with declining enrollments, critically important.
And then urban, rural, the list goes on and on.
From my vantage point as the executive director for Montana Quality Education Coalition, let me just say this. The immediate relief, and we are fighting a little bit right now over the immediate relief and how we are going to get there. And immediate relief is important to all of our schools out there. There's no question about there. But there is something more important, and that is the long-term fix. We have no interest in going back to court. We would like to see this matter resolved. We think the court has provided sufficient guidance for this to be resolved. And we genuinely believe that we and the legislature can resolve this matter. So we are confident that over the long haul we can accomplish what really needs to be accomplished, and that is to make sure that we have a funding system, frankly, for the first time in many, many, many decades, that is actually constitutionally correct. And if we can accomplish that, God bless everybody that was involved in helping to cause this to come to realization. I can't help but add, that as we might stumble along the way, we need to get back up and work together to find our way. If we don't, we will do what we did from the very beginning. We will protect the rights of children. And as we are not interested in going back to court, period, not interested in going back to court, if by some chance this legislature just simply decided to ignore this long-term remedy fix and not to address it in a responsible manner, we would visit the courts. And we would ask the courts to direct the legislature to reconvene to address the matters that were unresolved.
I think you answered my question about the constitutional crisis then. This is not, Montana is not alone in this. I think, 44 or 46 out of the 50 states have either gone through or are going through this same sort of torturous process in order to achieve a very laudable goal of providing for the public education of our citizens. And it doesn't look like it's very simple, and it's not very simple, and Montana's not alone in doing this.
Yeah, Montana is not alone. I hesitated there for a second because all evening I wanted to use the word torturous, and now you used it. I guess I can use it back.
Okay, but it is. It's been a torturous. You look at the people who are working on the four people who are on the committee working on the formula. Those four people have a long-term knowledge of Montana taxation and school funding. And just going through the data, I don't see how they do it, quite frankly. And I know that those people, Senator Story, Representative Glazer, who are the other two, Jackie, help me out.
Senator Ryan and Representative Holly Razor.
Those people, they know the system that they have, and they're trying to take and build something that will meet the court's okay. But it is a torturous process, that's for sure.
Yes, I agree. It is a torturous process, and it's a it it it's just a huge undertaking, and it's huge because in Montana, the state share of funding has fallen from 71% down to 60% since 1993, mm-hmm. and that's part of the problem. That drop we've fallen 17% in the state share, 17% behind the inflationary costs, and it's tough to not only address because it's complicated, but it's also tough to try to figure out how we can catch up and how we can ensure that we continue to have schools of quality without imposing too great a burden on the taxpayers in Montana. And we need to be sensitive to all of those issues. At the same time, we need to make sure that we do what is right for the children of the state.
We've been visiting with Jack Copps, the executive director of the Montana Quality Education Coalition, and we thank you, sir, for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack.
We'll be right back.
I just want you to think twice about it before you vote yes on this. The fact is, you took a House bill, you stuffed three major Senate education funding bills into this House bill. Then you added a bunch of amendments in the Finance Committee. And now we've added three or four more very substantive amendments on the Senate floor. And somehow, we're going to do all this with completely bypassing and circumventing the House Education Committee. You're preventing from this new bill, I call it a Frankenstein bill, because it's put together with parts from a lot of other bills.
You know, I think term limits is showing its ugly head when people in this body get surprised by problem solving that's creative and hopefully nonpartisan. Problem solving that comes from our hearts and our commitments to the citizens and the kids of Montana. It's no different than the last 13 years where I've served in the minority. It didn't always feel good, and the solutions weren't always mine in the end, but that's the work we have to do in a session of 90 days. I hope we can support something that will move forward, that hopefully we can provide a vehicle for the House to use that we can all ride in the end, that helps us get us through the crisis that's been created over the years in education.
And that's actually some of the debate, Jim, from House Bill 63 this week, which was put on a very fast track. And I think Vicky Cotterella made a very interesting statement tying it to term limits.
That's one of the problems. We don't have the only institutional memory left in the legislature now is those people who served in the House, went over to the Senate, and in a couple instances we have...
Or vice versa.
People who served in the Senate and went over to the House. We've come to that portion of our program where you, the listener, can call in and ask questions or make a comment. And in Billings, we're at 657-2941. Outside of Billings, it's 1-800-441-2941. We did overdose a little bit on education this evening, but that's the topic that's being debated with some intensity this week, as
right.
we saw with our guests. What
right.
else
and
is going to happen that's interesting, though?
It is the topic. But what is also very interesting is the Senate Taxation Committee did pass out a couple of sales tax bills, including one by Senator Kitzenberg of Glasgow and Senator Essman of Billings. Also, the Senate Taxation Committee passed out a bill to raise the taxes on PPL Montana and you know, this is a bill we've seen before, and basically some members are upset that PPL protests its property taxes and the impact that that has on local governments. So it's not as if there aren't other issues going on at the legislature, though I will say that the committees are beginning to wind down their work, and really all attention is focused on this four-person school funding committee. Can't forget House Bill 2 also.
The budget,
which Senate Finance, the main budget bill. Senate Finance has that bill right now. They hope to get done this week.
We should let people know that House Bill 2 is the general funding bill for state government and covers the items of education, corrections, health and human services, and many other state agencies.
$7 billion budget.
For 2 years.
Yes.
We want to make sure that everybody know that. We're at 657-2941, 1-800-441-2941. We have, 3 weeks left before the end of the session or the required 90 days. What are some of the odd bills that are going to get up to the governor that people might be interested in? I know that when I was interested in this session where the state would have gotten into the business of building transmission lines and setting up a revenue bonding mechanism did not make it out of the House. We discussed that earlier.
It was a lot of it is because you have that 50-50 split in the House in certain committees. Some bills are not going to make it out, and again, you know, I go back to the so-called silver bullet, which is a parliamentary procedure that allows the sponsor or interested party to go to their respective leaders and say, can we use a silver bullet to bring that bill out of committee because it's stuck there on a tie vote? And the sponsor of that particular bill, as you know, Jim, Representative Alan Olson of Roundup, doesn't believe in that. And so that bill, didn't ask for it.
It might be a good time right now to remind folks that the legislators work very difficult hours. This is not an easy job. Most people go up there. No one makes any money by being there.
You're not going to get rich.
You're not going to get rich. You get paid, you know, for rent and food, and that about takes care of it. And the hours are long. The public abuse is about equal to being a soccer referee. And we should remind our listeners that serving in the Montana Citizen Legislature is a very arduous job, and we should make sure that we thank those people when we see them, because it is very difficult. We don't have anybody who wants to talk to us tonight, Jackie.
Oh, okay. Should mention also staff. Staff has been working tremendous hours as well, mm-hmm. trying to keep up with requests for information, for analysis. And today on the House floor, some of the staff, the Speaker of the House held up a brochure that actually House staff decided to put together. It's very nice. It's, they did it on their personal computers, put in a picture and the names and just a little brief bio of all of the staff that are here working at the Montana Legislature. It's really interesting because there are people that have come from different parts of the country, different backgrounds. And it's sort of this, fun thing. I mean, for me as a working reporter here at the Capitol, I go to staff all the time. So it's fun to, you know, to get to know them on a one-on-one basis.
Right. Well, we're going to wrap things up here this evening. We will be back next week on Thursday evening again with another session of What's Happening in Helena. And we are going to, folks will want to pay attention to what's going on now in the next 3 weeks because it's going to all be telescoped.
And things are going to happen very, very fast.
And
from this point out.
Right. So we want to thank everybody for helping us out tonight. Chad Reinhart for manning the phones and Ken Siebert for manning the board. And thanks to you, Jackie, for all your hard work. I'm Jim Gransbury of the Billings Gazette. Good night.
Good night.
For more information on tonight's program, as well as archived audio of previous programs in this series, visit www.ypradio.org.